At Soycle.
Who's the most fun to drink with of the Republican lawmakers?
At Soycle.
Todd also confirmed that Robin Voss has virtually no sense of humor.
At Soycle. You can always let us know if you are drinking with lawmakers at 844-967-2789.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin, welcome to the noon hour of our pre-election, our election eve coverage, because tomorrow is a big day, and I am so excited to talk to our next guest, who spent some time in Wisconsin, and maybe has a little bit more insight on some of our Wisconsin brethren than we do, as far as people who we don't always
engage with
in the same way, because we certainly are center-left. And yet there is a lot of people here and across the country who are very much on another side of the political spectrum. And he has spent a lot of time with them. Our guest is, he's an academic, a journalist, an author whose work has focused on religion. And he's been covering the conservative religious movement for over two decades. And his new book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War, which has been described as an unmatched guide to the religious dimensions of American politics. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin, Jeff Charlotte.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. And I think, so Jane was the one who found an interview with you, I think in The Guardian, talking about this book, talking about the conversations you've been having. But before we get into, because I'm so interested in how you approach those conversations, because I think a lot of us don't know how to, whether it's with family members or friends, but also at a larger scale of how to talk to people where it feels like we don't agree that gravity is real. But before we do that, I guess for your career, like you've focused on religion for two decades. So what was it about the conservative movement that drew you to it in the first place?
I mean, nothing originally. I was sort of avoiding, I didn't want to write about the religious right because I had this sort of stereotype of them as sort of, you know, Southern men in too tight suits and they're sweating and they're pounding their pulpits and pounding their Bibles. And I thought I knew what it was. And then for me, this began a long time ago, right after 9/11, when the brother of an old friend came to New York, where I was living at the time. And said he was there right after 9/11. He said he was there to survey the ruins of secularism. I thought, well, that's an alarming way of looking at it. And he had sort of left his career in finance to join a movement dedicated to a kind of Christian nationalism elite. And you know, they're every bit as critical of democracy as Al-Qaeda, right? So that, I said, well, I wanted to understand what drew him into it. And that was my entrance into writing about the right. And to be honest, you know, I ditched it some years ago. I was like, I've done my bit. I've done I've done my part. But I was in Wisconsin, partly because I have a child who, I have a queer trans child who is seeking mental health care, and we found it in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
And I was in Wisconsin, and there's no way of looking past. You know, we drove out to Wisconsin, and it was just fascist flags ticking off the miles like mile markers. How do I tell my child, hey, don't be afraid, don't be paranoid, when half the country is passing laws against their very existence? So that's what brought me back into writing about both the right wing and religion, and that's why I was in Wisconsin.
So you came here. It's interesting. So you were in Wisconsin for a total personal reason, but then also started with the book. And so with this new book, because the family was more about a specific group versus this is more about MAGA conservatism. And I guess, as you said, even though you took a step back, in the 20 years since 9/11, how has it shifted to where we are? Does it make sense for someone who's actually looked at it and studied it to understand how we got here, as far as groups that have gotten to such violent ideations? Does it make sense to you?
I mean, look, I wrote in this book, The Family, and people don't like to read. There's a Netflix documentary you can see. But I wrote then, and I said, look, you know, fascism, real true fascism and the definition of the term, that'll be in particular locales in the United States, but we'll never have full fascism. We'll never face that threat. And I said, the reason was because of fundamentalist Christianity. We would never switch out the Father, God, for the Fuhrer, for the cult of personality, which is central to fascism. And while violence has been a part of our American way for a long time, we will never embrace explicit sadism and pleasure of violence. I was wrong. And I write in the undertow, I was wrong. And I saw it as soon as Trump came down the golden escalator in 2015. I said, oh, here is the fascism that this group I've been writing about has been exporting internationally. For years, here it is, come home to roost. And not just in Trump, but in all the little Trumps. I mean, you've got them there in Wisconsin, not just in your state legislature, but in your school boards. And I'm going to mispronounce it. I always do. Waukesha school board member.
Yep.
In the book. I did it. All right. And she said, critical race theory, it's everywhere. She says it is secret and subtle and strong. I'm mangling the quote a little bit, but her deep paranoia that critical race theory, I mean, I teach at a college. That's not just a college level thing. That's an advanced college level thing. That this is somehow in Waukesha elementary schools. It's surreal, but there it is. And that's that empowered, extreme militance that has changed. It has changed over the 20 years that I've reported on it. The situation now is worse. It's why I call it a slow civil war. It's not a hot civil war. It's more like a cold war. But we have women dying, bleeding out for lack of reproductive rights. We have armed standoffs every week between Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, Three Percenters with their AR-15s outside of libraries, hospitals, schools. We have states criminalizing my child, your friends, everybody, right? So we're in it now. People say, could there be violence? The violence is here.
Yes, absolutely. We're talking to author Jeff Charlotte about his new book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War, which is our civil war, which is what he's referencing. And because I hear you talk about it right now. You talk about the danger of it, and we're in it. And I know you describe it as our condition and not a crisis, because we're living in it. It's not something that is going to peak and then subside, right? Like, it's something that we have to face that is part of our, that's become part of our culture. But as far as, you have a clear point of view on it when you talk about it, when you write about it, and yet you were able to start so many conversations with people. And so what was it, how did you begin these conversations? How did you keep your, I guess, judgments and your own feelings out of the conversation to get people to open up to you who obviously see the world so differently?
Well, I'll tell you, as a writer, I don't keep my judgments out of the conversation. I go into every conversation. My goal is to be human, which is not always easy. We move through the world with manners and, you know, presentation. If I can be as human as I want that human to be with me, right? And I think of a guy named Rob Brum, a militia leader up there in Marinette, Wisconsin. And I was driving around Wisconsin after Roe fell. And Wisconsin, of course, became the only ostensibly blue state, right, in which abortion was illegal. And I was just stopping. I'm a photographer, too. I was stopping and photographing the flags. In Marinette, I don't know if I can say this on your station, there was a flag that said, well, I was like, F. Trudeau, right? And I thought, well, that's an interesting choice for a Wisconsinite. And I stopped to take a picture. Little did I know, the family had all kinds of security cameras. They clocked me as soon as I opened the door of my car. And they come out, and Rob Brum, the patriarch of the family, comes out in camouflage and carrying a handgun, as always carries, open carries, and offers me a flag. I said, well, I was interested in your flag. He says, you want
an
one?
An F. Trudeau front flag?
Yes. And I'm
is
like,
that an extra one?
It felt like maybe, I will say, look, I mean, I am myself. I don't withhold judgment, but it felt like this is not the case. You know, someone offers you something, the polite thing to say, oh, well, my gosh, oh, thank you, invites me in. And inside, he's got a pool table on which he's preparing for a training for his militia, the Wisconsin 4th Red Arrow Militia, AR-15s, all kinds of long guns, a gun he incorrectly describes as the gun that Dirty Harry used. And I take pride in my research, so I discovered that this massive handgun was different than the massive handgun Dirty Harry used. And his kids, a three-year-old running around who's already been trained on semi-automatic assault rifles, his daughter with a Nazi tattoo. And we talked. We talked for hours, partly because this was a guy who wanted to talk and was afraid that his other militia members would see him as unmanly for his talkativeness. And so he welcomed me. I didn't hide where I was. He had looping on a television in the corner a video that he had taken on January 6th, where he had been there at the Capitol. I didn't hide that I thought this was an insurrection. He knew who I was, and he said, look, you might be a Fed, but you didn't kick my door down, so I don't shoot you. He had sort of like three tiers, and I was in the tier, there's attacker, there's this. There's two tiers in which you get shot, and then there's a third tier, fool, which is how he saw me, and you don't get shot. And instead, he offered me, and I know this is sort of sounds like a goof, but there it was. He offered me something that was so disgusting I've never seen outside of Wisconsin. Maybe it's not Wisconsin's fault. Taco pizza.
Don't blame us for that, Jeff. Don't blame Wisconsin for that.
I don't think Wisconsin invented it. I said no. I took the F-Trudeau flag, and I said no to the taco pizza, and we talked about the guns, and he even let me photograph the guns. He says, the ones that you can see are all legal. Which is an interesting way of phrasing that, right? The ones that you can see. And I think it's important. Some people say, all I need to know about these guys, you know, is where their nose is so I can give them a punch them in the nose, right? I don't think that's true. I think we need to understand the varieties of fascist thought. And I do use that word fascist deliberately. And I think we need to understand also the fault lines within it.
Absolutely. And I want to talk more about that when we come back. Our guest is Jeff Chartlett, who's the author of The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. We'll talk more about his experiences in Wisconsin and also maybe his takeaways that we can learn from as we try to talk with people who are on a very different side of the spectrum than us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Tell the midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him the guard's gonna cut him down. God's gonna cut him down.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Jeff Chartlett, who is the author of the new book, The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. And so when we tweeted out this morning that you were going to be on the show, Jeff, you retweeted it and said that you found some hope in Wisconsin. So I'd love to hear about some of the hope that you found.
So, by the way, I'm wearing, and I don't know if Wisconsinites think this is corny, but I like that Collectivo coffee in Milwaukee. So I'm wearing my Wisconsin, my Wisconsin hoodie as we talk, just by accident. It's just that Wisconsin follows you home to Vermont. I drove to Black River Falls, Wisconsin. I was driving around without a plan, just driving around Wisconsin, talking to folks post-Roe, and I pulled into Black River Falls, little town, central Wisconsin. Some people might know it as the town in a famous or infamous book, depending on your view, called Wisconsin Death Trip, which is not anti-Wisconsin, very pro-Wisconsin book. I see on the bridge over the Black River, this young woman holding the sign saying your misogyny is showing. This is right after the downfall of Roe. And I circle around and there's more kids, young women, queer kids. There's a local preacher, big towering guy, shoving his belly into the face of this woman who's 4'11", screaming at her, and she holds her ground. And a cheerleader from the Black River Falls Tigers, Peyton. Peyton comes with her sign that I cannot say, I don't think, I can say, F off. And the sign, Jane is saying, no.
Please, no.
I can say F off, though, right?
Yes, you can say F off. Yes.
But that's her, and these are young people. Now, these are not, you know, God bless Madison, but these are not Madison mm-hmm. hipsters. This is a small town in Wisconsin. These are student body presidents. These are good kids, and they are furious. And they're furious, really, at me and at you and everybody who is older than them and who has failed to protect their fundamental rights to live their lives and be human. I spent some time with them, and we got to talking about this so-called civil war that every right-winger, every militia man I'd met believed was coming. And I thought they were going to be shocked, but they weren't. Basically, their attitude was, in a way, bring it on. Now, that's not where I'm at. Nobody wins a civil war. But their courage and their heart, this, like, this is a struggle. We're going to have to fight this. They weren't saying, like, why can't I just go to college and not thinking about this? They're saying, I'm going to have to fight for my rights. The struggle is now. It is here. And they recognize, too, that the struggle is long, right? That's why I reject that language of crisis. Fascists love the language of crisis. Trump's been going around saying it's the final battle, like it's a wrestling match. No, it's not. The struggle for freedom is long. And those kids in Black River Falls knew that better than half the New York Times editorial board. They were the ones with the heart. And they gave me a lot of courage.
That gives me a lot of courage. That's a great story. But I guess from your conversations, from writing the book, from 2 decades of writing on this topic, it is long, but how do we, because I think there's a debate. There's different approaches, right? There is as simple as Marjorie Taylor Greene being on 60 Minutes last night, right? I know. And there's the conversation, though. It's like, do you, as a media, as we're in the media, any media outlet makes it, how do you try to normalize to an extent because you think that there's people on that side that are redeemable, and so you want them to still be getting accurate information instead of living in their echo chamber? Or like, how do you, like, what do you feel like, is there anything that reaches these people to bring them back? And if so, how do we engage and not necessarily combat and fight? Or is that the only way?
You know, I'm a Jew with a queer kid. And there's actually some wealthy right-wingers suing my kid's school district right now. And they are very educated people. I teach at Dartmouth College. They went to Dartmouth College. I couldn't get into Dartmouth College. They did. you know what? They're not going to convince me that my queer kid is somehow less than because they're queer. So I'm not going to convince them either. Like, there's no converting me, you know? I don't think evangelism is where it's at. I think organizing and building something beautiful and taking courage from one another is where it's at. Now, people in our families, we all have to learn how to love those in our family across some of those political lines. That we can do. But the idea that we're going to get out of this by just talking reason to a fascist movement that has committed itself to irrationalism, it's not going to happen. The right has created a, to borrow an old folk song, which side are you on? Which side are you on moment? Okay, so are you over there with the guys who are standing with their AR-15s outside the library because they're so upset because someone's telling stories? Or are you inside the library with the books, with the kids, with the people telling stories? I don't think that's complicated. I think those of us with the books, with the stories, we've got something more beautiful. We can build on that. I don't think we do it by saying, hey, let's go soft on these guys. I think we say, look at this beautiful thing we have.
That's interesting. And so is it more about, because there is these people then that they try to make this both sides equivalence. And so what do you say to those people as far as, well, there's, you know, this side and the left and the right. And like, I obviously am on the side that I do not see these two as the same, and there's fringe extremists on both sides, and one feels much more violent than the other. And so how do you, in learning, in all of this, how do you talk to that side, that argument of like the both sides-ism?
Yeah, you know, I teach at a college, and it's a liberal college, the epicenter of the so-called cancel culture. And every now and then a student will say something kind of intolerant and dumb, right? An 18-year-old will say something dumb. Amazing. 18-year-olds sometimes don't have fully thought-out ideas. And then every now and then I go and I talk to a militia man, a grown man with an AR-15 and a whole lot of guns, and he says he's going to kill people. That's not both sides. Yep. Which side are you on?
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jeff Charlotte, this was such, I wish we had more time with you. Thank you so much for spending time with us. The book is The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. We will link where you can buy it on our show notes for today. But thank you. I can't wait to see what you come next. And you're always welcome to come back on the show.
Thank you, Kristen. Thanks, Jane.
All right.
Take care.
All right. We got to take a short break. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And just a reminder that we are going to be giving away Brewers tickets in the next segment. I know a lot of people are maybe already tailgating for opening day.
It's nice out.
Which starts in 40 minutes, and it's actually nice. I have a story about going to the game on Saturday.
Oh, gosh.
But it was not as nice. No. I will say that. But yes, so if you have any interest in winning tickets for tomorrow's game, which is at 6:40 p.m. against the Mets, stick around. In the next segment, we are going to be giving those away. But in this segment, in January, Waukesha County Technical College kicked off a year-long celebration to mark its significant milestone of its 100th anniversary, which is, I did not know that Waukesha County Technical School has been around for 100 years. So here to talk about the celebration and some of the history is WCTC President Richard Barnhouse. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
So 100 years. I didn't realize that Waukesha County Technical College has been around for 100 years. And so how did it just start? Because it wasn't always like a college technical system, right?
Right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think in Wisconsin, we were in the right place at the right time. And so what I mean by that is it really started to happen at the turn of the century that there was something needed beyond high school. Not a four-year, but something beyond high school. And that really got kicked off in Illinois. So we just happened to be in the right place. And in 1923, in our area, the decision was made that there needed to be an investment in something post-high school. And it started out with something literally like 20 machine benches and a couple of drafting tables and a really small budget. And it got started in one of the local high schools at the time, which is now a middle school.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
And that's really how it got started, in the basement of the original Waukesha High School back in 1923.
And so was it more vocational based as far as, then Carroll College, I think that was also just 100 years, right? And
well, Carroll's actually the oldest college in the state.
Yeah, I knew that. So are they closer to 150 then? I don't know. I forgot. We talked to them at one of their anniversaries. Yeah. So they're even older, but was it a different kind of curriculum than the other?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So Carroll and others at the time were doing typical four-year education in whatever that would have been in 1923.
Yeah.
And so there was definitely a technical trade skill set, really, really hardcore trades that was needed with sort of the emerging technologies of the time. You know, if you think about the roaring 20s and all the things that were going on then, domestically and internationally, even at 23, thinking about that. And so there was this real need for it. And some technical colleges started sprouting up around the state. And so I think that Gateway might have been one of the first in 1911. And so in 23, things really got organized in the Waukesha area.
Okay. And so then over 100 years, mm-hmm. Not that we can go through the, you know, decade by decade.
Well, how much time do you have?
I mean, exactly.
We want the curriculum from every year.
Yes, exactly.
Leading up to today.
But as far as kind of maybe blocks of time, as far as how things have evolved over those 100 years.
Well, I think, you know, early on, like where we just ended the last piece there, is it was really heavy industrial and hardcore, you know, working with your hands, not back then in great work environments, right? And then we got into the 1940s and 50s post-World War II. Things continued to change. Healthcare got brought in, those types of things. And we also added, we didn't add a two-year program until the 1960s. I think it was either 62 or 63. So from 23 to the mid-60s, it was really one-year technical diplomas, certificates, those types of things. And then in about 62, really formal two-year education, associate's degrees came in. And then from 60 on, it really started to boom. And so in, just to give you an idea, in the late 50s, early 60s, there might have been 700 students. You know, by the early 70s, we were at about 12,000. And then in the peak in the 80s, when, you know, population was booming, we were probably at about 30,000 students.
Wow.
And today we're right about 16, maybe a little over 16,000 students overall. But what we've really started to add in the last number of years are things that you might not think of at a typical old school technical college, right? So we brought in liberal arts programming. And why is that important? Well, I think that if you're a taxpayer in this area, we need to provide options for everybody and not just some. The other thing, when I'm explaining, for example, the liberal arts to manufacturers in our area that get rich, why are you doing this? It's, you know, it's not what we need. But statistically, and the data shows that about on a tech college campus, about 30% of the students who start in a liberal arts program flip into a technical application.
Really?
Yeah. And so they're gaining all these additional students taking a technical application simply because we offer the liberal arts.
Oh, that's super fascinating. And is there any trend as far as which technical programs they transfer into?
Yeah, well, there's always a waiting list for nursing.
Okay.
Surge tech is really popular. But things are emerging more and more on the business side of the house. So in specific business applications, lots in IT, even more in cybersecurity. We've got one of the best cybersecurity programs around. And we're really starting to push heavy into robotics. We've got an unbelievable robotics systems program. It's absolutely outstanding. And we're on the verge of launching artificial intelligence and machine learning. And so things are really starting to move in that direction. And we're, I think for, you know, in many cases, colleges are trying to keep up with society.
Yeah.
But in this case, we're really trying to get out in front of things with machine learning, artificial technology, blending it in with some of the programs that we already have.
Oh, that's so interesting. We're talking to Waukesha County Technical College President Richard Barnhouse about their year-long celebration of 100 years in existence. And that's really, so as far as with those programs, are those programs that are machine learning, AI, robotics, are those set up to then finish your degree and then immediately start working in them? Or are they also still feeder programs to bigger or longer programs, grad schools?
Exactly. So all of the above.
Okay.
So you should come and be a recruiter for us because you've already got it down perfectly. So all of the above. And we're right, you know, we're just, we're midway through getting things organized. And so we've been working with Intel, the chip manufacturer, who've been fantastic to work with and helping us get our curriculum really set up and working with local manufacturers to understand what their AI needs might be. And you'd be amazed at the artificial intelligence that's being used in the city as well as in the county overall. But to answer your question, we need to do a few things. So number one is we have to upskill the existing workforce. So over COVID, everybody got smart machines, robots, not sure if people were going to come back to work. So the companies in our area really invested heavily, but they're not using the full breadth of what those machines can do. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a responsibility to go out and really train the existing workforce in AI. Then we're going to offer a one-year tech diploma in artificial intelligence and machine learning so that students can come out and go directly into workforce. And then we're going to do two things on the associate degree side, the two-year piece. So one will be the ability to come out with somebody come out with a two-year associate's degree in AI and hit the shop floor. The other is going to likely be calculus-based, like our engineering programs, with direct transfer to MSOE, UWM, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to the chancellor of UWM as well as the president at MSOE to make sure that we're dovetailing our programs correctly so they can move on to bachelor's, master's, doctoral level.
And so as it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think there's so many conversations happening around declining enrollment and post-COVID and people wanting and feeling the value of going to any advanced schooling after high school, right? And so how much do you find yourself working with the other schools and systems, like the UW system, the other technical schools, the private schools, and how much is that a conversation among administrative leaders of Wisconsin higher education programs that's like working together maybe in a way that they weren't before?
Well, it's in our state, it's pretty awesome, and specifically in the Southeast Wisconsin area. So there are 18 colleges and universities, public, private, for-profit, not-for-profit, two-year, four-year, et cetera, in the greater Milwaukee area, Southeast Wisconsin, going all the way down to the border. We meet every month.
Oh, wow.
So I see those presidents and chancellors from those other 17 colleges and universities every single month. And so we're talking about things on a regular basis. And this is something that was largely set up by the chancellor at UWM, Mark Mone, good friend and colleague, who set up a group called HERA, the Regional Higher Education Alliance. And we meet every month. We talk about lots of different things. We have some of our own goals and things that we're working on together as a collective. But then it gets even more micro. And so just last week, I was talking with Cindy Nattinger, who's the president of Carroll, and again, Mark Mone, who's the president of UWM, just about how we might partner in the future and how we can share resources and ultimately get students through our programs at a faster pace, at a better price, and more direct right out into the workforce.
That's awesome to hear, honestly, the fact that there's that much collaboration across the different programs, because I feel like I'm in general a fan of collaboration over competition as far as sharing the ideas and everything. So that's so cool to hear that you guys are doing that. But to go back to the celebration, you guys have a whole slew of events planned. So what are some of the events that you have coming up?
Well, what I would say, and if my PR staff are listening to this, they're going to be really unhappy. But I would say something, you know, I'm going to be out there and happy to do it. But on Earth Day, we're going to be cleaning up different parts of the city, different parts of the county. And so the college, and we've got about 1,200 employees.
Okay.
So we'll have a lot of people out in shirts just cleaning up parts of campus, part of the community. And so, yes, I will be there with a smile on my face. There's nothing like picking up garbage. But it's a great way for the college to give back to the community just in a really simple way. We kicked off in January with just some celebrations on campus. We had one in January, one in February as well. March, we had a board's celebration. So we've got the District Board of Trustees who oversees the college. We've got a foundation board that's responsible for fundraising for the college scholarships, et cetera. We brought them together, and then we brought every living board member from both boards who still could get here to this event. And it was unbelievable. One of our former presidents of the college, Dr. Barbara Prindeville, was there. It was great to see her. And so that was a great celebration because all of these people have been working on boosting up and building WCTC for a long, long time. So then we get into things in the fall. We'll have some celebrations. We're doing the Hone Bridge light up on May 1st because that's our actual anniversary.
It's May 1st.
May 1st, 1923, the magic began, right?
And what are the colors?
They are white, gray, and blue.
Okay.
Yep, so you'll see them. And our students are going to be programming the lights.
Oh,
we've got
cool.
Unbelievable technical expertise.
Yeah.
So they'll be lighting
really
that up
cool.
as well. And then we've got a couple other events, and then we end with a large formal gala, black tie gala that we'll be hosting on campus.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
You guys are busy this year.
Yeah. And there will be these things that always pop up that I've been told but I don't remember being told. So we'll certainly have some other things that, that pop up along the way as well.
And how much is open to the public as far as people who just want to support the college?
Yeah. So most of these events will be open to the public. Okay. So for example, the Hone is going to be a great opportunity for folks to come down and experience that. And there'll be things, activities going on and those types of things. If people want to pick up trash, you know, that's not typically, if right? If you're looking for volunteers, that's not something that people are typically like, sure,
it's
yeah.
It's a good Earth Day thing.
It's a great Earth Day thing.
You need one of those.
And then we will have some tickets available for the gala later in the year. We're also going to have a celebrity chef. We've got a phenomenal culinary arts program and baking program. And so we will have celebrity chef come in and there'll be tickets available for that as well.
Well, that is great to hear. This is all super exciting. But WCTC President Richard Barnson, the Brown House, thank you so much for spending time with us today. This is, who knew? I didn't know. All that programming for the AI stuff, it sounds so cool. Well, and we'll link all of that to our website on the show notes for today. But thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
All right. Have a great day. We're going to take a break and be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Kristen Bry, she is Jane Matinere, and we are preparing for our 1 o'clock guest coming up at the top of the hour, Bradley Whitford, Wisconsin native, political activist.
He's done a couple things.
Actor, yeah. Emmy Award winner, is going to be here from 1 to 1:30, and we are very excited about that. But before we do that, we're going to give away some baseball tickets, which will be one of many times that we're going to be giving tickets away for this year, because on some of our stations, on WISS, Oshkosh Air, and across the Fox Valley and WRCE, you're going to be able to hear the Brewers games now that the Brewers are back.
Yes.
And so with that, we have tickets for many of the games coming up to give away all season long to listeners. And so we're going to start with not today's game, because today's game starts in 20 minutes.
Yep, the home opener.
But the there's two tickets that we have for tomorrow's game, April 4th. For those of you who are not going to be sitting waiting for the results to come in, but the game's at 6:40 tomorrow at American Family Field. We're going to be playing the Mets, just like we're playing the Mets today in Milwaukee. So if you would like to win those tickets, the fifth caller. We'll say the fifth caller. Jane will take your name and your information at 844-967-2789. If you call before the end of this segment and you have a great opening day story,
we'd love to hear it.
We'd love to hear it. But because we are on a time frame as far as trying to get Bradley on, if you call after that, but we're going to take the fifth caller starting now, 844-967-2789 to win free tickets for tomorrow's game at 6:40, Brewers versus the Mets. And hopefully the weather will be better than the weather was for me when I went to the game on Saturday against the Cubs. We went down to Chicago and we went to the Cubs-Brewers game, and it was cold. It was very very cold. And it was actually, I've been to Wrigley Field before, but it's been a while. And I'm pretty sure when I went the last time, I want to say it was like 10 years ago. And it really was, it was in the middle of the summer. So it was great. And that is a great stadium. It is so historic. Wrigleyville is super fun. The banter between Cubs fans and Brewers fans, I find fun. Some other people might think Greg Bach is not a huge fan of Cubs fans, but we had a great time. But Saturday, certainly did not feel like spring. And so I, for one, was pretty happy at the new pace of the game with the new rules. Because we sat in general admission. So we were sitting over in the bleachers, which was fun. I mean, I looked around and I was like, what do you think the average age in the general admission section was? And I would say my guess was about 24. I would say was probably a pretty good guess as far as the average age of the people sitting in the general admission seats. But we were there. People were drinking. And even with enough beer, I was like, I've been at Packers games where the games were so much colder because I wore a winter coat. I wore a hat.
Yeah.
I wore my fleece tights. I had gloves. And I still was like, by the bottom of the six, I was like, we're going to a bar. So we headed over to Murphy's. Cold. And then we won. So it was great because we won. But I will say I was a little bit of a wuss with what the temperature was like on Saturday. So I don't know if I'm now biased that I... Right now, I know some baseball purists might... not agree, but for now, I'm kind of a fan of the faster pace of the game.
You are? Uh-oh, Greg Buck's going to be upset with you.
I know, maybe we'll talk about it on Wednesday when he comes, but I would say, it does feel, some people we were with are like, it feels a little rushed. It feels like the batters aren't necessarily ready yet, because basically, like, the batters have to be that you can see the clock now. Like, there is a countdown clock for all these different things that now you can't just take your sweet old time to get done. And that includes the batter being ready to get pitched to. And then also the pitcher not taking forever.
Right.
And so all of these incremental things, especially if people, because I would say it was bottom of the sixth that the Cubs got their one run. Because we didn't see them get their run. That's when we left to go to the bar. And then, but those first six innings with not a lot of offense were like clipping along
pretty quick.
And
wow.
I didn't hate it. I gotta be honest. I didn't hate it. But again, that's also because we were outside. It was cold. On a very nice day, I may have a different reaction of it being a little bit more leisurely.
Really? Because I get so annoyed with the adjusting of the gloves and the adjusting of when they're batting, and the now I got to do this, and now I got to pull this shirt sleeve three times, and then I'm going to stand in a circle and hop around, and then I can maybe hit a ball. Just it, you know what I mean? And I think some of those are superstitions.
I'm sure some of them are superstitions,
right?
But that's what I think. Because it adds up, all those little those little time things add up to a pretty long game versus this.
Keeps it moving.
And I think it was funny because we had dinner with friends afterwards, and our friend who lives in Chicago, he works at a law firm. The law firm has a box. And so he was saying he doesn't like it because all of a sudden, you know, because when they sit in a box, there's free food, there's free drinks, you're there with clients, you're like BSing for the afternoon, and you're like, well, wait, now it's over in like 2.5 hours and I got to go back to work? Like...
Where's the fun in that?
And so, so I'm excited. Mike is going to opening day today. At AmFam. I will not be there, but I am excited to get to some games this year. It was fun to see. We ended up winning both Saturday and Sunday. So that's a good start after a rough start with Thursday's game. But pretty, pretty excited. All right. Well,
I want to congratulate Jared, by the way, who was our fifth caller and picked up those tickets for the game tomorrow night at AmFam. So well done, Jared. Thank
congratulations,
you for
Jared. All right. Well, stay tuned throughout the season. We have plenty of tickets that we're going to continue to give away. We'll play some games. We'll do trivia. But today was a very packed day with guests. And so we'll get you on the air next time, Jared. But when we come back after the news, we are so excited to be talking to Mr. Bradley Whitford. If you have questions for him, feel free to text them in, 844-967-2789 or leave a comment on the live stream on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter. But I'm very excited for this conversation. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.